I feel like as educators, we've learned so much. And also a lot of our students have really learned a lot about the world. And I think shifting our focus, shifting our thinking about this as being wasted time, I think is just a first step. Like, what have we gotten out of this time and how can we build on that?
What have we learned and how can we build on it? Two questions more vital than ever as California students prepare to go back to school, sort of. Thanks for joining us again on Adventures in Ed Funding, the series presented by CASBO, the California Association of School Business Officials. My name is Paul Richmond, and I'm your series guide. You know, we spend a lot of time on this podcast talking about school funding and how schools operate. All of that, at the end of the day, is about making sure that the support and resources are there to spark the magic of learning. But amidst so much discussion and guidance and even politics about how the new school year will begin due to COVID-19, it can sometimes feel overwhelming, or in the words of one district superintendent, as if we are all scrambling remotely. So in this episode, we invite you to breathe deep and exhale slowly as we connect in with three truly inspiring individuals, a student, teacher, and principal. We'll hear firsthand about what they've learned and how they're staying focused on what matters most as the back-to-school season gets underway.
I started teaching 18 years ago. I grew up in a really little town in Northern California. It's called Point Arena, and it's in Mendocino County. And I grew up pretty poor. We didn't have electricity when I was really young. And I had all these amazing teachers who really wanted to help me go to college. And I even had a basketball coach drive me to take the SATs like 2 hours away. So it was all of these amazing educators who were showing me that, yes, you have this great life where you are, but if you want to have other options, we can help you do that. And I thought, I want to help other kids do that if they want to. And I want to push them if they don't want to show them that it's maybe a possibility that they might enjoy.
That's Rosie Reed, high school teacher in the Mount Diablo School District in Contra Costa County.
I also feel like education is just absolutely the best means of creating a more just world. I've thought that since the beginning, that I want to change the world, and I think the best place to do that is the classroom. So that's why I started teaching, and that's why I'm still here. I teach English and ELD, English Language Development, at the high school level, and I love that.
Rosie is a national board certified teacher, fully dedicated to her students and to racial and social justice. In 2019, she was recognized as California Teacher of the Year. It was a true honor to connect with her recently as she busily prepares for the school year ahead. Rosie, I think I saw that this year you'll be starting at a new school. Is that right?
Yeah, I was working at Northgate High School in Walnut Creek. And this coming year, I'll be working at Ignacio Valley High School, which is in the same school district. But I'm excited for a change. It'll actually be my fourth school in 18 years. And every time I move, I learn a lot. And I want to just keep growing and learning. So time for a change.
Have you, because of the pandemic, have you been able to go to your new classroom?
I'm actually going in tomorrow to try to set it up. I was able to move my things from one classroom to another, but everything still needed to be cleaned and sanitized. So I actually even had to leave it outside of the classroom. And I guess tomorrow I get to get back in and put up my posters, and I have a little couch and lights, and I really try to make it a homey space. So I'm excited to go beautify and decorate.
So Rosie, I was wondering, as an educator, how have you tried to stay informed with all of the different guidance and information that's coming down from, say, the state, from the county, from your district? How have you tried to stay on top of that and process all that?
Well, first of all, I've had to realize I cannot just be in this deep dive of trying to keep up all of the time because it is also constantly changing. So I do tend to really get lost in the news. I spend a lot of time reading the news. I spend a lot of time reading what's coming out from the state. But because it's so frequently changing, I'm now trying to, maybe I should skip a few of these missives and then wait a minute and see where it lands, because it can be overwhelming and frustrating. I think you're doing this, you're doing this, you're doing this. No, wait, just kidding. You're doing this other thing instead. And so I have, in the last few weeks, have really kind of taken a pause to say, let's just figure out what we're doing. And then I will wrap my head around it. Because I think that the anxiety of trying to understand the fall is, I don't need that space right now.
Hey guys, you have to go out right now. I'm going to call soon. Thank you.
I'm so sorry.
That was one of Rosie's children. Did I mention yet that she and her husband have 6 children of their own?
In addition to facilitating distance learning as a teacher, my husband is also a teacher who was facilitating distance learning. We had a lot of kids at home and we had to help them with their distance learning. So I learned a lot about what to do and what not to do on my end. And I also watched as my kids' teachers were learning. And that has been incredibly helpful for shaping what I'm going to do this fall.
And tell us some about what you learned.
Well, 2 really big things that I learned. One is there's a big debate about synchronous learning. Should we require kids to have synchronous classes? Should we offer synchronous classes?
And synchronous learning, as a reminder, is online or distance education where the teacher and students interact with each other in real time.
I offered synchronous classes and I also did not offer synchronous classes. And I had some of my kids have synchronous classes and I had some of them not have synchronous classes. And I will say that we cannot penalize students for not coming to synchronous classes, but I think we should be offering them because our students need to feel connected. And when I was having synchronous classes with my students, they were more connected and they were more engaged with the schoolwork in general. And so I will definitely offer some synchronous classes to each of my classes in the fall. At the same time, it is possible to overdo it. And when we're looking at high school students, having them have, 4 or 5 hours of synchronous classes in a day and then have to start all of their schoolwork, that's a problem. So we really want to find the sweet spot with that. Another thing I learned about synchronous classes is that if the work you do in the synchronous class is in addition to all of the work you're having them do, they would be better off not coming to the synchronous class and just sitting down and doing the work if they can do it. So having the synchronous class be woven into the work that they have to do anyway gives them incentive to come and do it with you and to do it with their peers. So that's one thing I learned. Another thing that I learned as a mom and a teacher, at the beginning, I worry a lot about equity. And I saw a lot of people online saying, oh, we can't grade students during this time. There's a pandemic going on. Every student should pass. And I really subscribed to that. And I told all of my students that the work that you do during this pandemic is going to be optional. And that was in line with what I was getting from my district and from my state. And I would call home for students who weren't doing any work. And their parents would say, hey, you told them it was optional and now I can't get them to do it. So I realized that I had made it really hard for some of my families to get their students, to think about school right now by saying it was optional. So I will be grading my students in the fall. I will be attempting to grade with incredible grace and flexibility and meeting students where they are. But I think that no accountability is not the answer for families.
So that is a big learning lesson just in the short time we've moved to online learning.
I experienced it as a parent too. It was really hard to get my teenagers who understood the grading situation. It was really hard to get them to do their work.
What do you think is maybe the most difficult part of this experience for your students?
I think that obviously the hardest part is the social isolation and the monotony too. It is a lot like Groundhog Day. I don't think any of them have really seen that movie, but the grown-ups know what I'm talking about, where you get up and you do the same thing pretty much every day. And some students were really, I'm going to learn how to bake and cook my family's cultural meals that I've never had time to do. I'm working on my creative writing. And some students were doing that. And even those students, it wore out after a while. Like, I just want to go back to school. So I think finding ways to keep it fresh, not doing the same thing all of the time in my distance learning is going to be important. And also providing the space in the Zoom calls. I mean, I use breakout rooms a bit in the spring, but I'm going to use a lot more breakout rooms in small groups and even try to do some projects and things like that, and use the Zoom classes to have those opportunities for the kids to have those connections. Because a lot of kids really were like, where are my friends? I thought I had all of these friends. And then now that we're separated, I'm not hearing from anyone. And that was such a universal thing that I was hearing from kids that I realized they are very connected on social media, but it is a thin connection. And when you take away the in-person opportunities, a lot of them are feeling really, really depressed and isolated.
And are you able to create that online, that environment where they feel connected and get to talk with each other?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you've used Zoom a bit, you know that there's the opportunities for breakout rooms. And I just have to do more thoughtful work with what I do with them. Sweetie, I'm on a call. Okay, I'll come out when I'm done. You can feed your dragon. Sorry, we got my daughter a dragon for her birthday.
Real life and your profession intersect.
We thought since she wasn't having a birthday party with any friends at all, we would get her a pet. So we got her a bearded dragon. So she just asked if she could feed it.
That's great. Now, I want to go back to those feelings I know most of us are experiencing at times of being overwhelmed, anxious, because there seems to be so much information out there, yet so much is still uncertain. Beyond all of us maybe getting a new pet dragon, I asked Rosie if she's found some ways to help mitigate those feelings.
Yes, I guess I've been just really trusting that it's going to work out. Maybe that's naive, but I do think that we're going to find a way. And I don't think we have quite found it yet. I think we're getting there. I think it's really important that the governor has given strong guidelines for when schools should open and when schools should close, because putting that on the individual districts was creating, I think, a lot of infighting between, you know, parents and teachers, and even between teachers, and between teachers and districts and unions and districts. And I think those guidelines really take a lot of that out so that we can start working collaboratively more on solutions. And I have felt more calm since the governor has sent out those guidelines. And now I'm excited. I have a meeting in just a little bit to start working on a curriculum for the fall with my district team. And I think that has just given me a lot of peace.
Do you feel as the guidance gets more and more refined, do you feel like we have our priorities right as a state?
Yes, I think that safety absolutely must be the priority. I think that there are students who are missing out on learning when they're doing distance learning. And I had kindergartners last year. I know it doesn't work as well for kindergarten. I also have students who have IEPs, and I understand how challenging distance learning can be for students with special needs. Like, firsthand, I understand that, not just as a teacher. But I also know that we have to be keeping our teachers and our students safe. And that anxiety of feeling like we were going to have to go back into an unsafe situation was really making it so we couldn't focus on the learning, at least personally, and some of the teachers that I had talked to. So I think now that we're figuring out, okay, here's what it will look like when we can go back in terms of safety. And then this is what we're going to need when we do go back in terms of safety. We're starting to figure those things out. And I feel like in some ways that has been taken off of my plate of worry, because I think those conversations are being had in a way that I didn't feel like they were being had a month ago. And then now I can focus on my teaching.
The plate of worry. I feel like we've all been given a big serving of that lately.
That's right. Yeah.
Rosie, any additional lessons you've learned from this experience so far that you can pass along?
Well, I learned that I need to make my lessons irresistibly interesting. And if I think they're irresistibly interesting, they have a chance. So I took out all of my best lessons, the lessons students tend to really enjoy. And I started with those, and I was getting pretty good responses to that. And I said, hey, how can I do more like that? And there was a lot less pressure with, hey, we don't have to do the standardized tests that we were going to do. And we can really work on 21st century skills. We can do the fun of school. The stakes in some ways are lower. Like if I can keep these kids learning, I'm winning. And having that attitude really made it, I think, more fun for me and more fun for my students because they have so many distractions at home that I have to really work on the engagement factor. And, you know, getting them to slog their way through an expository essay on a book, it's maybe a thing I could get them to do in the classroom, but it's never going to happen at home. And I would also say that one more thing that I've really been excited about is finding ways for them to connect with each other and the world through technology. I had them record some podcasts and then upload them to SoundCloud. And that was their assignment 1 week. And then the next week they had to go around and listen to each other's and respond to them. And so taking me away, I think they are having these incredible feelings of isolation. And if we have them only communicating with the teacher, that's going to be exacerbated. But if we find ways for them to communicate with each other, I think that's going to be a lot better. And then also, you know, I was looking for contests. I had my students enter the Mount Diablo Peace and Justice writing and art contest, and they had to create a submission. It could be writing or art. So finding ways for me to not be the only audience for the work that they're doing, I think also helped raise engagement and participation in online learning.
Those are great suggestions. Thank you.
Another thing that I've really been thinking a lot about is I had several students who did much better in all of their classes when they were at home. And that's wonderful. I mean, some of my students were failing all of their classes and they managed to pass their classes. Granted, the stakes were lower. We weren't doing quite as much work. But it made me start thinking, what about the conditions of school are not good for all of our students? Is it too much work? Is it social distractions? Is it a climate and a culture that's not making them want to learn? So when we go back, how can we not go back to the old days, just back to business as usual? And how can we think about ways to serve those students better? Because I'm not just talking about one or two. I had several students who did better in all of their classes during this time.
Well, Rosie, thank you so much for sharing your experiences and helping refocus us on what we've learned so far. And thank you most of all for being such an inspiring educator. Any final messages, maybe for students across the state?
This pandemic is going on longer than we had hoped, and we don't know how long it will go on. And it is an opportunity right now to do what you love in addition to doing your schoolwork. And so, you know, when you look back on this time, what will you say about this time? And did you learn anything new? What did you learn? What did you learn because you wanted to learn it? And I'd say, go after that thing. What do you want to do with this time?
Understanding how our students are experiencing this pandemic is vitally important to improving state and local efforts as we go back to school. Of course, we have 6 million plus public school students in California. That's a whole lot of experiences and perspectives. We're excited to share one of those many important voices here. Her name is Angel, and she attends a high school in Northern California. I asked Angel to start by sharing a bit more about herself.
Okay. I will be going into 12th grade. And academically, the subjects I enjoy is math and science, but I also go to a performing arts school. So performing arts wise, I really like dance.
I'm curious, have you been able to do dance with schools' campuses closed?
Well, at the end of the school year, we switched to Zoom calls. And so you were able to, she would have you turn on your camera and you would do all the workouts and all the dance moves in front of her, and she would like be able to correct you. So it was kind of like regular class. However, I was recovering from a surgery, so I wasn't quite able to participate.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope you're feeling better.
I'm doing great now.
Oh, good. And Angel, have you done any thinking about what you think you might like to do after high school?
Yeah, I have actually. I know for the most part that I want to do something that can directly help people. And the areas that I've most been thinking about is being a surgeon, specifically like trauma, pediatric, cardiothoracic, a forensic scientist, or a detective.
Excellent. So I know that you've probably been looking forward to your senior year for quite a while. And with the pandemic now, obviously things have changed. Campuses will be closed again to start the year. So I was wondering, how does that make you feel going into your senior year?
Honestly, it kind of sucks just a little bit in the social aspect. Like I won't ever get to go to prom because my prom for junior year was also canceled, so I'll never get that experience, and I was really looking forward to that. There's no more dances. Senior sunrise and sunset is canceled. Our senior trip that we've been planning for 4 years is canceled. So a lot of the things that people really enjoyed about senior year, my class won't ever get to experience that because of COVID, but academically, it's not really that much of a difference to me. Like, dealing with doing the online classes, as long as they're able to take the workload that we initially had and cut it down to a reasonable amount and make it online so that we can all do it, I think academically it's fine. It's just I would really miss and regret the social aspect of it.
Have you done anything in particular to prepare yourself for your senior year, knowing that it's going to start, at least start out much different?
Well, it's so uncertain on what they're going to do that it's really hard to prepare for something like that. And I don't even really know like how they're going to do any of the homework or the subjects. How are they going to be covered? And I don't even know my classes yet, honestly. So there's not a real way to prepare for it yet. It's just kind of because I know everything is going to be really technology based, like making sure you have a good computer, a good Wi-Fi, just things like that, so that you'll have a basic connection. And you really don't need that much school supplies because you're not really going anywhere. So you just really need like a pencil and some paper, and that's about it.
So you mentioned that you don't yet know your classes. So registration hasn't happened yet?
So what my school does is at the end of the year, we all, well, this year is online. We did an online form about which classes we wanted. And usually we would go for a schedule pickup and we'd all go to school a couple of days before school started and we'd all pick up our sheet of paper. However, I don't exactly know how they're going to do it this time with COVID. I'm just hoping they send us emails with our schedule, but they might split us in half and go by last name and have times where we all come to the school and pick up our schedules. So I won't know until a couple of days before my school starts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So I wanted to ask you, Angel, because obviously there's a lot in the news right now about restarting schools, opening campuses. There's been a lot of guidance coming from the national level, state level, your local district level. I'm wondering, first of all, are you trying to keep track of all that different guidance?
Well, I don't have any direct source to find out this information other than my mom. So she'll get emails from the school and she reads them to me, and that's really just how I find out about it. There's not a lot of other ways for us to know what's going on. So I basically use my mom as my source of information.
Well, that's a great source, I think. So some of the guidance that is being discussed when schools are allowed to reopen in person would be that most students, third grade and above, would be required to wear masks during the day. And another would be that, as much as possible, students would maintain the physical distancing, the 6 feet, especially 6 feet from teachers and other staff. What do you think about going back to school with some of those new guidelines in place?
I definitely understand the importance of it. Safety is a really big thing, and I understand why they're doing it. I do think there's definitely going to be some challenges. Like for me personally, I'm going to have a really hard time being 6 feet away from my friends. And our school campus isn't that big. So in terms of lunchtime, when everybody's out, there's not a lot of space for us to go. So I don't quite know how they're going to keep us all 6 feet away with that. In terms of masks, they don't really bother me that much. It's hard to breathe a little bit if I'm like exercising or if it's really hot out. But other than that, it's not really something that bothers me. And the only other challenge I see with maybe wearing masks is teachers. Sometimes they're hard to understand without masks. So wearing a mask, trying to hear what they're saying might be a difficulty. And trying to get help from them might also be a difficulty if they're trying to stay 6 feet away.
Right. Well, will you promise to wear a mask and tell your friends to wear masks?
Oh, yeah, we do whenever we hang out and stuff. And so I definitely think it's important to keep everybody safe and prevent the spread of COVID.
Is there anything else that you can think of as a student that would make you feel more safe and comfortable on campus?
I think my school is taking the appropriate measures. So they're having us all wear masks. They're doing the 6 feet. They're also proposing, if we actually switch away from online, that half of us go to school in person while the other half is online and we switch so that there's less people on campus. I know at the end of last year, the classrooms really stocked up on hand sanitizer and Clorox wipes to wipe down the desks and stuff. So I think my school is definitely taking the appropriate measures for safety. In terms of comfort, about sociability, I feel like that potentially like the leadership of school could come together and maybe come up with some friendly and safe activities that we could do to still keep up the idea of senior year and just fun school activities that are, you know, able to be 6 feet away and wear masks and still have fun at the same time.
Are there some things you feel like that you've learned from this experience so far?
I think it taught me a lot about myself, that I don't actually need a lot of things to be happy. Like, everything I need is right here in my room. I've got my mom, I've got my dog. So in terms of what actually keeps me comfortable, it's not a lot. And so that's something I learned.
Is there any advice that you would give to school leaders or state leaders to help support students?
I think if teachers and school leaders could be there in the sense of having ways to mentally check in on your students, I think that'd be important. Because for some people, being alone in their room for so long isn't the best situation. So if teachers can have wellness check-ins with their students to see how they're doing, that'd be beneficial. If teachers could come up with social distancing like activities that could incorporate some fun, so not everything is just school and gloom about a pandemic going on. If they could incorporate some sort of social activities, whether it's like Zoom trivia or, you know, a challenge where you have to, on the social media, find certain images and like a scavenger hunt or some sort of activities that could really engage students. In terms of academic support, just be able to be available for that one-on-one support that the student might need. Because through learning online, it's kind of like you're really teaching yourself. Because, yeah, you're listening and you're hearing what they're saying. But for me personally, I'm much more of a hands-on visual learner than I am auditorily. So I have a hard time retaining information just by listening. So for people like that, it might be easier to get a more one-on-one Zoom call where they're able to, you know, get that hands-on support while they're taking their notes and hearing the teacher give them more information at the same time. So just having that kind of support and stuff would be really important.
So I want to ask you to look in the future, and let's say we're many years into the future and you're maybe a surgeon and you have maybe children of your own. What do you think you might tell them about the year 2020?
It was definitely a year to be remembered. lots of things went on politically and, you know, just in terms of how our society is growing as a whole and changes that are being made or that need to be made. And I'll talk about how at one point there were murder hornets and a pandemic and everybody thought the world was just going to end. So yeah, 2020 is definitely a year to remember. It's unique in this sense.
Do you think you'll tell them when they're thinking they have it tough, you think you'll say, yeah, well, way back in 2020, I survived the pandemic.
Oh, for sure. I have to pull that card on them. Everybody needs ones.
Absolutely. Well, Angel, thank you so much. This has been really insightful. Is there anything that maybe I didn't ask you that you want to add?
I think the only other thing I'm thinking about adding is just as students and as teachers, remember your community and that everybody can support everybody in whatever ways that student or teacher might need, whether it's just, you know, having a conversation with them to see how they're doing. Or for example, in my school, we have something called Link Crew. So I'm going to be a Link Crew leader for the young ninth graders. And I know this is definitely going to be a difficult time for them because it's their first year in high school. And not only that, it's just so full of change. So I think if we just try and be there for the students and help out those who are younger than us and just in general, have that support system. I think it's really important during this time.
Angel's comments about remembering your community and supporting one another are a perfect segue into our next guest. She's Amy Rovae Gregory, principal at Greer Elementary School in San Juan Unified School District in Sacramento County.
Greer is a Title I school. We have more than 96% of our students qualifying for free and reduced meals. We serve over 600 students now in grades kindergarten through fifth grade and have more than 20 different home languages spoken by our families. Our school community is extremely diverse, both demographically, academically, and social emotionally. So we've really spent these past 4 years working hard to create a true community school. Building those partnerships with our community so that we can work together to focus on our students' academics, health and social services, youth and community development, and extended opportunities for enrichment.
And I had the chance to visit your campus last fall for a parent informational night, and it was so impressive, both the turnout and the engagement. And you also have quite a large number of immigrant families and refugee families.
Right. Yeah, Sacramento is a hub for our immigrant and refugee families. And, you know, we have community supports that help get them directly into school and then special trainings and opportunities for our parents to participate in learning about how the American school structure works and ways that they can be involved in their children's learning.
Can you also share with us, what was your pathway to becoming a principal?
Absolutely. I've been in education for nearly 20 years now. I started out student teaching in a very diverse Title I school in Sacramento and knew that that was where I was really called to be. So I've stayed working in the Title I schools as a teacher, instructional coach, English language learner specialist, vice principal, and now these past 4 years as a principal of Greer Elementary.
And since the pandemic started in, you know, early to mid-March, what would you say have been some of the most difficult parts of being a school principal?
Yeah, it's all been so incredibly difficult. Schools are, as you know, so much more than just teaching and learning. Our school really is a safe haven for our students and families. And really our school's entire culture and climate is built upon a foundation of face-to-face interactions, hugs, high fives, community building, collaboration, and enrichment opportunities and more. So when our school buildings were closed that Friday, March 13th, we literally had zero time to prepare for that as educators, nor did we get to prepare our kids for all that was going to come. And that lack of closure was and still is heartbreaking. Some of our kids we, you know, haven't seen or heard from since that day. And though all educators did their absolute best to replicate some sort of classroom experience virtually, it just isn't the same, especially for a school like ours. Our teachers and support staff had to quickly pivot into a whole new instructional mode, one that we've never been trained for. We had to quickly get devices out to all of our students, learn new digital platforms, new ways to teach the standards virtually, and new ways to engage our students and parents to help address the deep digital divide that our Title I students and families face. And of course, doing all of that remotely from home without the materials and supplies and structures that are typically found in our classrooms. So as a principal, this required revamping and recreating every single thing that we do each day as a site leader, but also figuring out how to do it remotely for all of our stakeholders. So it was as if we really were building the plane while we were flying it, but with some missing parts and no flight plans and no additional supplies. So it really has been the most challenging thing I've ever faced as an educator.
And how would you say it's going so far?
Well, you know, we've learned a lot. And so I am looking forward now to the opportunity of just the shift that we've made from really crisis teaching, which is what from March 13th till the end of the year was, to now spending the summertime really working with our educational team and coming up with ways that we can really enhance and switch from that crisis learning into true distance learning to start the year. But it's been hard. The whole situation has just been really devastating for education and for educators. So there's nothing more that we want than to be back in person with our kids and families and colleagues. You know, no one wants the current reality that we're living in, and we know how difficult it is for our students' mental health and academic progress. We know it's very challenging for our families with childcare and academic support for their children at home, and the difficulty that our educators face with trying to teach remotely while still healing that heartbreak from not seeing their students in person each day. But we also want to ensure the health and safety of our students, families, and colleagues. And really, I mean, we know, you know, COVID-19 is no joke. We've had staff members in our district and all across the nation that have come down with it and passed away from it.
There's a lot of guidance that's been issued. There's a lot of information that schools and school districts are having to sift through. Do you feel that for the most part right now that the state and local districts that we're getting it right in terms of priorities and focus?
Yes, I think, you know, staying on top of the guidance and information, it's definitely been a challenge since this particular coronavirus is such a novel and ever-changing disease, which leads to information and guidance constantly changing. And so because scientists are still learning every day about COVID, we're left with just putting our best thinking forward and devising a plan based on that thinking, but also knowing that we have to build in ways to quickly pivot should the new discoveries yield new guidance. And that's been what's been extra challenging for us. So to stay on top of it, you know, I do my best to listen to the experts and the epidemiologists, our Sacramento County Office of Education, state and local health officials. I think it also has been helping to see, since this is a global pandemic, being able to closely monitor how other schools have been doing all around the world as they grapple with the same challenges that we're facing now. And this has greatly helped us to create a carefully thought out school reentry plan for our own school sites. But in terms of how I personally feel our state and nation is doing when it comes to guidance, it's tough because everything has become so politicized. I do often wonder how our society's reactions and responses to the pandemic would have been different if it wasn't an election year. That definitely has impacted how the pandemic has been handled and responded to. And in many ways, it's one of the reasons that's contributed to why we're in the situation we're in right now with education and the need for distance learning. So in moving forward, I'm very hopeful that we really can take the time to reflect on what we've learned through this pandemic and come together as a nation to really refine some of our systems and policies that have severely impacted our effectiveness with mitigating the pandemic.
Can you think of some examples?
So things like, as a nation, building more partnerships with community businesses and organizations to help create improved systems and policies around supporting families' childcare needs, their healthcare needs, social services, and other necessities, all of which often falls on our school system to help solve. you know, schools are given a tremendous amount of things to provide supports for, far beyond just academics. If we as a nation could explore ways to partner with more community organizations to help spread some of these needs out and better support our families, that would help schools truly focus on the key components of education while also building up a strong foundation of community supports for all of our families and not leaving them so desperately reliant upon schools to meet those needs.
Do you feel confident that as we move forward and once we do get through this, that we will be able to seize that opportunity and make some of those significant changes?
I am very confident about that. You have to have optimism and hope being in this profession. And I think this has really been an opportunity that has greatly shown this light of inequity and has really forced districts all across the country to really see how deep our digital divide is, what are the challenges that often are taken for granted, and really our school system that is built on this white middle-class structure, what are the things that we need to do to change that so that we truly can have equity in education for all of our students?
We'll come back to Principal Amy Rovay-Gregory in just a moment. But first, we thought you might like to hear a few familiar sounds from school campuses, those places we all hope will be open and operating safely again soon across the state. When your students and teachers are back on campus, what do you think might be one of the first things you do on that first day when everybody's physically back on campus?
I have dreams about it because I just can't wait for it to happen because we desperately miss everybody so much. We already are talking and planning about the things that we're going to do to help keep kids engaged virtually right now, but also ways in which we can still have them feel a part of campus while they are away from it. And so virtual assemblies, virtual pep rallies, we've been working with so many community organizations and local celebrities and people that the kids just really look up to find ways to build in engaging opportunities with them to really just keep the kids motivated and going and excited about learning.
You mentioned motivating students, and as a principal, you lead and help motivate a whole team of students, of educators, obviously, and also so many others on the school staff, classroom aides, custodians, secretaries, food service staff, parent liaisons. How do you help keep everyone motivated, especially when there are such unique challenges? And it's so easy sometimes, I would say, for people to slip into bouts of despair.
No, absolutely. And mental health has definitely been a piece that, we are very cognizant of and checking in with our staff because, you know, our students are our heart. Like that's why we went into education and to have this inability to physically see them and interact with them definitely takes its toll. So I've had to really get creative and think of ways to continue this engagement piece because we do a lot of that team building on campus and we do a lot of it in person. I have a great, amazing, wonderful staff and we really are a family. And so they're in person. That's always been our go-to way, whether it's, you know, cooking them early morning breakfast before a class starts and we all get together and hang out. Like those were the types of things that we did to foster that community. And as a leader, that is one of my main jobs is keeping that sense of community and belonging and togetherness going. So we have been doing all kinds of various things from sending postcards and notes to the teachers, calling and checking in on them. We have a digital form that teachers, our whole staff can check in with throughout the week to let us know how they're doing and if there's issues that are coming up. We have buddies that are assigned to check in on each other so that they have someone in their peer group that is reaching out actively. We have done things like for, you know, different appreciation days, driving to their houses and delivering things for them to just to surprise them and help get them to smile. And then really taking the time to have our parents and our students also give their thanks and check in with them, because that does, you know, it's the kids that keep us going. And now knowing that we're going to be heading into distance learning, we're getting very creative with the ways in which we're going to kick off the school year, because that is always our big 2 days together before the school year starts. And it has been something that we are actively planning how to do that in a virtual format and still keep that level of engagement high and supportive.
Well, Principal Rove Gregory, thank you so much for sharing some of the lessons you've been learning. I really appreciate too that you were able to jump on the line to talk during your evening, even after I know what must have been an extremely busy day and what must be extremely busy weeks. Thanks so much for your leadership.
Oh, thanks so much, Paul, for having me. You guys have a great night too.
Okay, take care. We hope listening to just a few of California's amazing students and educators has helped lift your spirits during this COVID-19 time. As always, we really appreciate your joining us. Our show is presented by the California Association of School Business Officials, CASBO. I want to offer a very special gratitude to Molly McGee Hewitt. Molly is retiring at the end of July after serving as CASBO's CEO and Executive Director for the past 12 years. Thanks for being an incredible champion of public education, Molly. And welcome to Tasha Davenport, CASBO's new CEO and Executive Director. Tasha previously served as Chief Operating Officer and Deputy Director, and we'll look forward to hearing more from her on an upcoming episode. Until then, keep wearing those masks, washing those hands, planning those plans, and remember periodically to breathe in and exhale slowly, because we are going to make it through this pandemic.